Greetings and good morning, Western Colorado. Thanks so much for choosing KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. It's 8 o'clock, and here's your local newscast for Friday, February 15th. A federal court ruled yesterday that the Bureau of Land Management policy of not divulging the identity of entities nominating public lands for oil and gas development is unlawful. The precedent-setting ruling stems from a lawsuit filed in June 2012 by the nonprofit organizations Citizens for a Healthy Community, based in Paonia, and the Western Environmental Law Center. The groups filed the suit after the BLM refused to reveal names of the companies that had nominated parcels in Delta County. KVNF's Marty Derlin spoke with CHC's Jim Ramey.
The public deserves to know who's nominating these lands so we can fully evaluate the company's safety, environmental, and health records and know who we're working with. To our knowledge, this is the first time a judge has explicitly said the BLM cannot withhold this information. This information has to be provided to the public. So in that regard, it's a precedent-setting victory for us and for communities across the West. Again, the government can appeal. Hopefully they won't. They'll see that this is a realistic thing. The community should be provided with this information, and hopefully the BLM will follow suit and change their policy accordingly so this information is provided to the public and we don't have to go through with unnecessary Freedom of Information Act requests every time a nomination of a public land for oil and gas leasing comes through. BLM argued that there is an exemption under the Freedom of Information Act that allowed them to keep this information a secret, and the court explicitly disagreed with the government's argument.
The Denver Post reports that at least 84,000 gallons of water contaminated with oil and chemicals used in hydraulic fracturing spilled from a broken wellhead in a field about 4 miles north of Windsor. On Monday morning, a mechanical failure sent a smelly stream of steaming greenish fluid onto the soil. According to a state natural resources spokesman, a cleanup crew used a vacuum truck to try to suck up the liquid, while fire trucks tested the air every 30 minutes to ensure that leaking natural gas was not about to explode. It took more than 30 hours to stop the flow from the well bore. The closest homes to the spill are about 1,500 feet away. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission could not yet say whether the spill contaminated groundwater or streams, or whether enforcement action will be taken. The company in charge, PDC Energy, has reported two other spills near Greeley in the past few weeks. Both contaminated groundwater, according to a state database of spills. About 17% of 2,078 oil and gas spills reported since January 2008 have contaminated groundwater. Fracking wastewater is one of the most common substances spilled. Meanwhile, Democratic leaders at the State House hope to introduce bills dealing with the impacts of hydraulic fracturing by the end of the month. This comes as Governor John Hickenlooper is touting Colorado's current regulations as a national model. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
The state's Oil and Gas Commission recently adopted new rules for fracking, including increasing the setback distance from oil and gas wells to buildings and homes. But many Democratic lawmakers, including Senate Majority Leader Morgan Carroll of Aurora, think a 500-foot setback distance is still too close and the rules too lenient.
While it's a move in the right direction, the proximity to high-density urban areas is still going to be problematic. There's still a lot of residents and homeowners out there that don't feel that they're getting the safety protections that they would like to see yet in the rules.
Carroll says several lawmakers in both chambers are planning to introduce a variety of bills related to fracking, which pumps a mixture of sand, water, and chemicals into the ground to help extract natural gas.
We're still woefully understaffed as far as inspectors to enforce the current rules for what's out there. We really still haven't looked at public health impacts in any way. The concept of fugitive emissions or flaring for air quality issues on this. And there's a whole host of environmental best practices.
But right now, lawmakers are keeping the details close to the vest, and stricter laws could meet resistance from Governor John Hickenlooper. He says the state already has stringent rules in place. He even recently testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, saying Colorado has struck the right balance.
We do have the most rigorous set of regulations around oil and gas in the United States. Everyone else who is there all are looking at us and saying, you're going to require water testing before and after drilling wells? You're going to increase a setback? Do you realize that's a taking? I mean, everywhere we went, people said, how are you negotiating this?
And when asked about possible groundwater contamination from fracking, Hickenlooper told the Senate committee he once drank frack fluid that was made from food additives. He said it wasn't tasty, but he's still alive. The comments angered the environmental community.
It leaves the impression that this fracking fluid, and really that oil and gas development, is safe in Colorado.
Chris Arend is with Conservation Colorado. The group wants the governor to take a stronger stance on protecting public health from the impacts of energy development. Specifically, they're hoping for tougher air quality standards.
There are known impacts to our air from oil and gas, and we feel like that the things that we have done already fall far short of what we could be doing.
For his part, Hickenlooper says his comments on drinking frack fluid were taken out of context.
It wasn't intended as a political statement. It was intended as a description of the honest efforts that the industry was trying to make to have an industrial fluid that was totally harmless to the environment.
But Hickenlooper admits the fluid he drank is only a prototype and is too expensive right now for commercial use. He clarified his statement and says there is no frack fluid being used today that anyone would want to drink. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
And now it's time for our weekly report from the Black Canyon Astronomical Society.
The term light pollution refers to excessive and glaring artificial lighting, especially light that is scattered above the horizon. This is a very serious problem for astronomers because it can prevent them from seeing objects in space. Light pollution also can impact day-night cycles of animals and may be linked to certain health problems. Reducing light pollution helps preserve our starry night skies and can also reduce energy costs. Globe at Night is a light pollution awareness program that has been ongoing since 2006. The program is managed by the University Corporation for Atmospheric Research and Colorado State University. This program relies on ordinary people, not necessarily astronomers, to view and report on the brightness of stars that they see from their location on certain nights of the year. There are 5 sessions planned for 2013. The next one is March 3rd through the 12th. The program consists of 4 simple steps. 1. Find your latitude and longitude. 2. Find Orion or Leo between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. 3. Match the number of stars that you can see with the charts provided on the web. 4. Report your observation. All of the links needed to follow the instructions can be found on the KVNF website. Select Programs, Short Features, and click Western Slope Skies. During the last 7 years, people in 115 countries contributed over 83,000 measurements during the campaigns, making Globe at Night the most successful light pollution awareness campaign to date. Packets for teachers and families are available at globeatnight.org. You can also find information about how students can become Dark Skies Rangers, a program sponsored by the National Optical Astronomy Observatory. You've been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Brian Cashin.
The very first Grand Junction Film Festival is taking place tonight and Saturday at the Avalon Theater. KVNF's Allie Lightfoot spoke with organizer Ross Deerdorf to find out more about the event and the films being shown. Here, he explains how the festival got started.
Kind of been in the works for several years. We've just been kind of laying the groundwork, and you know, finally, about a year ago, we decided we were actually going to do it. You know, so we started talking to the Avalon Theater in Grand Junction. We put a call for entries out, and we were kind of amazed at the amount of entries that we got, and the wide range of varieties of stuff that we got from all over the world, really. So it's kind of just a pipe dream becoming real for us.
In this film festival, you're featuring both international, national, and local films. Can you tell me about some of the films that are in the festival that you're excited about?
Yeah, I'm really pumped about one that we're showing. It's called Happiness Promised Land, and it's a French documentary that's about a guy that was hit by a car and he was injured from the waist down and he couldn't walk, I think, for close to a couple of years. When he regains his ability to walk, he takes a trek across the French countryside during the winter and he sleeps on floors and visits with people, and the testimonies and the insight he gets on what makes people happy is just incredible. I mean, it almost seems, I don't want to say it seems like it's scripted, but like the insight and the way that people open up to him on camera is just incredible. And you get this worldly perspective you don't get from being in America, I think. But he's currently touring it in Europe right now, and it's getting a lot of responses. It's won a lot of awards for best documentary for that category.
That sounds great. What's your background in film? How did you come to want to start a film festival in Grand Junction?
Well, when I was, in school, I was on the path to be, I was really interested in documentary film, and I made a lot of short documentaries for a number of years. And then I got into the news side of it, which actually brought me out here. I've worked for a number of the stations in town, and I do commercial stuff, creative long-form stuff for clients, and everything from wedding video to commercial stuff, basically. And I've always had an interest in film, and I just felt that Grand Junction is such a big economy on the Western Slope, and it's just surprising that there isn't more outlets for people that have those interests. I mean, I know so many people that make their own short films, they make their own creative projects, they're in school, and they don't really have a place to show it. I mean, there's not a lot of outlets and opportunities for people to, display their work, locally or, regionally, nationally. So that was one of the reasons for getting into it.
We have a film festival here, the Pioneer Film Festival.
I saw the call for entries actually ended this week, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And so it sort of turned into an event that just is featuring mostly local films or films made on the Western Slope of Colorado. And I have to tell you, I was completely surprised at the first year, especially at how many filmmakers there are out here. Was that a surprise to you as well?
Yeah, we have several films that we're going to be showing that are from local people. And, there's a lot of, regional stuff, Denver, Salt Lake, New Mexico, Arizona, kind of the Four Corners area stuff. A lot of people have heard about it, and a lot of people are coming that, have a background in this and are just really excited to, instead of trying to make it in these bigger metro markets like Denver and, L.A. and, Salt Lake, and just have to send their stuff basically outside of this area to be seen. It's exciting to have that outlet for people.
What do you find about this area that sort of lends itself to that work?
Well, I think that, I think most people think about Colorado. They think about, tall peaks and just constant skiing. And, the landscape really sets a perfect backdrop to tell some really awesome stories that you don't need to have an expensive set or a city to tell.
Mm-hmm.
It feels kind of vast, you have a lot of space in between people and places and things, and there's a lot of this kind of this openness that really kind of helps tell stories, I think, that a lot of people, I think, are missing out on by not, paying attention to that if they're really into film.
Right. I'm surprised we haven't had a Western yet in the Paonia Film Festival, because to me, this landscape, I guess I could go out and make one myself. But it completely seems like a modern-day Western would be a perfect project out here.
I totally agree. I was happy to see that we got one in that genre.
I've been speaking with Ross Deerdorf, who's the organizer of the Grand Junction Film Festival, which is taking place this weekend. It's very first year. It sounds like it's going to be a good time. Where can people get tickets?
You can buy tickets in advance at City Market.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Junction at both locations, or you can just show up at the door. It's the same price.
Great.
Tickets available at the door.
And for a schedule and more information about the Grand Junction Film Festival, visit gjfilmfest.org. And finally, yesterday, a group gathered in Paonia's Polis Park to protest violence against women, part of a worldwide Valentine's Day action called 1 Billion Rising. KVNF's Marty Derlin has the story.
Inspired by poet and playwright Eve Ensler, the event was aimed at raising consciousness about sexual abuse, creating solidarity, and speaking for the 1 in 4 women who are victims of violence. The Paonia group danced, sang, drummed, hugged, and marched down Grand Avenue. Here are some of the sounds and voices of the late afternoon gathering.
I'm here because I think it's easy to live in a nice little community where you don't realize that violence against women does occur, not only worldwide, but right here. And so it's really one of those hidden things that people need to be made more aware of.
I was violated when I was 13 years old, and it's a really serious problem. And I just want to support, you know, everyone getting along.
I know we can make a better day together.
For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
And that concludes a busy daily newscast for Friday. I'm Eric Gould for KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio. I'll be back with you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody, and thanks so much for listening.